I'm Barry Steinhardt. I am the director of the Technology and Liberty Program of the ACLU. With me up at the table here is our senior legislative counsel, Tim Sparapami. On the phone, if he's not now, who will be on the phone, is Chris Calabrese in New York, who is counsel for the ACLU program on technology and liberty.
I'm here, Barry.
Oh, you are there. Okay, great. And Chris will be available to answer questions. Here's what we're proposing to do. I'm going to make some opening statements, and then Tim will add some additional points, and then we will take questions. We will ask that questions please come from the media only. We've got a lot of people on the phone, so we're going to have to kind of ration that. And then Chris Calabrese will join in the answers to those. So let me begin by saying that we have had a chance to read the regulations in the past 2 hours, and I think there are a couple of takeaways from the regulations and from the from Secretary Chertoff's press conference and the other sort of comments about this. The first is that what the Department of Homeland Security has done is to kick the can down the road to the next administration, and probably not just the next administration, but conceivably two or three administrations from now. It is crystal clear when you read these regulations, right in the second page, actually, of the document that was released today, that for the majority of Americans, if Real ID can be built, and we don't believe it can be, it will not be in effect until the very last weeks of 2017, 10 years from now for most Americans. The first Real ID compliant licenses will not be issued until 2014, 7 years from now. They have kicked the can down the road to the next administration, and they've done that for a couple of reasons. First of all, this is going to be extremely difficult to we believe impossible to implement. And secondly, it's going to be a real nightmare for American drivers and for license holders, and they don't want the blame. They don't want the to have to suffer the fallout from this nightmare that is about to be visited on Americans. So they kicked the can down the road. Second takeaway, I think, from this is that those states that and there are 8 such states now that have said, no, we are not going to participate in Real ID, and another 12 or so which have said that have asked the Congress to repeal Real ID, there is going to be no real penalty for their failure to comply. Secretary Chertoff made crystal clear in his remarks at the press club today that even for the first occasion in which Americans will be have to encounter Real ID, which is boarding an airplane, that they will accept other forms of identification. There's no penalty here. Americans are not going to comply, and many states will not comply. This is a avoidable train wreck. We can, and I think the next administration will have to undo what the Bush administration did today, and I think in its essence what the administration did was to set up the next president to take the fall here for a law that can't be implemented. They've demonstrated that. It's bad for security. We'll talk about that. It's bad for privacy. It's bad for its day-to-day impact on Americans. Just the hassle factor alone makes it clear it's bad. It's not acceptable to kick the can down the road to the next administration.
Thank you, Barry. This is Tim Sparapani from the ACLU. I'm the Senior Legislative Counsel. I just want to add a few points, very brief. I'm going to make, I think, just 4 points. In addition to what Barry's already said. But first, I want to lay out the vision here. Nothing that has happened today with the publication of these regulations has changed the fact that was absolutely crystal clear on May 11th of 2005 when the president first signed this bill. Real ID, if it is ever implemented, will produce lines around the block at every DMV, every day in the country, for every person who goes to a DMV. We are talking about an enormous imposition of the federal government into the lives of individuals that will be felt every time you go to a DMV. For most Americans, going to the DMV is one of those most hated moments when interacting with your government. It's like paying your taxes each year. There's a huge burden. Already, it's a pain to go to the DMV. It will be significantly worsened if DHS and the federal government insist upon implementing the Real ID regs. So what does that leave us with? That leaves us with point number one. Congress must act now to repeal the Real ID Act. There are two bills pending in Congress, S-717 and H.R. 1117, sponsored by Senators Akaka and Sununu, a Democrat and a Republican in the Senate, and Congressman Tom Allen of Maine, a Democrat in the House, and they have been joined by a myriad of co-sponsors from across the political spectrum who have all reached the same conclusion that the Real ID Act cannot be implemented and therefore must be repealed. Now, many members of Congress said they were going to wait to see what these final regulations said. Our message to them is, as soon as you get past the rhetoric from DHS, you will reach the conclusion that many of your fellow members of Congress have already reached, that this act cannot be implemented, it must therefore be repealed. So point two, why is it that these regs don't actually help us out? And that's because DHS, despite spending 2.5 years after the passage of the act, failed to take on any of the significant privacy problems that were clear to people even as this act was being debated back in 2005. For example, DHS failed today to tell private companies, third parties, or other government agencies that they were forbidden from stealing the information from ID users every time those IDs are demanded. So that means that Walmart or your Quickie Mart or any other company that you buy something from in the future will be demanding your driver's license every time you make a purchase. That company is then going to take that information and marry it up with your purchase record, and you're going to be hit in the future. All the consumers in America are going to be hit with spam advertisements. They're going to be have a detailed portrait of every single one of your purchases married up with your most sensitive, personally identifiable information, and that's going to be sold to other companies who are then going to market back to you. Worse still, there's going to be a new marketplace created for companies that want to take your purchase records, figure out where you're spending your money, and then sell it to the government so that the government has even a broader picture of what it is that we do day in and day out. And again, DHS, despite spending 2.5 years, failed to say companies should not be able to skim the information of individuals off their driver's licenses. Similarly, the system that was set up today in the regulations fails to force states to raise their privacy standards. If you get into the regs, what they say is that the states themselves are going to be setting the floor for the minimum privacy standards. That means that if any state in the country has very weak or no privacy standards, that every other state that wants to share information with them is going to be subjecting its citizens' information to a weak standard, able to be stolen by identity thieves or harvested by people who want to share that information or sell it to other people. So point three, what else did DHS fail to do today? Well, the ACLU is about the Constitution. We raised, along with people from across the political spectrum, important and valid constitutional concerns. They were evident on the way the act was written that this would be imposing enormous constitutional burdens on individuals. And yet, despite the passage of 2.5 years, DHS threw up its hands, and instead of saying, as they should have done, let's go back to Congress and rewrite these acts, the portions of the act that infringe on the Constitution, they said, we just disagree with people who have raised these concerns. So you see page after page after page in these regs where the constitutional concern is raised, and they say, we simply disagree philosophically that this is a problem. Well, the Constitution is more than just about disagreement. It's about the law. And DHS has failed to harmonize the Real ID regs, which they published today, with the Constitution. And then I guess my final point is this. When you get past the rhetoric and the spin, the math that the Department of Homeland Security is using to justify this program and saying it's going to be inexpensive, is very fuzzy. I don't know where they learned to add, but they should have flunked basic math. For example, one of the assumptions that the department is making to say that this act is not as costly as the $23 billion figure that they had put out in March is that they assume that one in every four adults in America isn't ever going to get a real ID license. And yet we know as a fact that because they have created a national ID card system, that no one will be able to function in our society without having one of these documents. So that assumption that one in every four of us won't bother to get a real ID license, and therefore they can cut the expected cost by one quarter, it's foolishness, and it doesn't have any basis in real math. No agency would give this kind of economic analysis real credence. So we're talking about DHS trying to spin this as much as possible to coerce states who are in deep budget crises into participating. Just this last week, it's been made clear that almost a dozen states have a budget crisis that they are expecting in their state legislatures of more than $1 billion. Our message to those states is don't spend a dime trying to implement these unimplementable regulations. Let DHS spin you with its fuzzy math, but don't spend a dime of your state citizens' tax money on a system that should not ever come into being and probably can't ever be implemented. Thanks, Barry.
Okay, we're gonna open this up to questions in just a moment. Operator, can you let us know who would like to ask a question? And we'll certainly take questions from anyone who's in the room here. If you'd like to ask them, just raise your hand if you would.
Okay, sure. If you would like to ask a question, please press the number 1 on your touch-tone phone once. If your question has been answered by a previous caller, please press the number 1 again to remove yourself from the question queue. All questions will be answered in the order in which they are received. One moment while I get your questions. Okay. Our first question comes from Devlin Barrett.
Hi, this is Devlin Barrett at the AP. I wanted to get your reaction to what Secretary Chertoff said today at the press conference, in which he said that any state that does not seek a waiver by May, driver's licenses for those states will no longer be valid for air travel or entrance to federal buildings.
Well, it is Barry Steinhardt. Let me answer that. I mean, I listened very closely to what Secretary Chertoff had to say. We're actually going to be as soon as the transcript is available, we'll give you the exact language. But Secretary Chertoff made it quite clear that there was, in fact, no real penalty here, that there will be other alternative forms of identification that individuals in those eight states that have formally opted out of Real ID that range across the country from Maine to Washington State, that there isn't any real penalty. This is a bluff, and the bluff has been called, and they're now in the position where they're going to have to admit that it's a bluff.
Can I just – a quick follow-up. Is it your position that there are enough people in those states with passports and pass cards that don't even exist yet that this will not be a logistical headache in those states?
Well, I think one of two things will happen. First of all, it's not clear exactly what documents will be accepted, but certainly passports will. And many, many travelers, air travelers, have passports, for example. The second question you have to ask is what if they do call the bluff of these states, right? I mean, what if they say to these states, okay, the only thing that we're going to accept at the airport to board a plane at Seattle's airport or at Hartsfield in Atlanta, Georgia's one of the opt-out states, is a driver's license from a state that has said that it will comply. Are they really prepared to shut those airports down, which is what effectively will happen if the residents of those states are going to have to go through secondary scrutiny? We don't believe that that's going to happen. They're going to accept other forms of ID. This is a scare tactic, and if you parse what Secretary Chertoff had to say today carefully, you will see that he made it quite clear that they were not prepared to shut down the airports.
Barry, could I just add one point?
Mm-hmm.
It's actually clear from the regulations that this is a bluff. Any state is allowed to request an exemption through the end of 2009 for any reason, essentially, with no commitment to implement Real ID. So, you know, any state, even an opt-out state, could say, well, I don't, you know, we're not going to do Real ID, but we'll request an exemption anyway.
That was Chris Calabrese from the ACLU, just for those on the phone.
Yeah, and I'll just add one additional point. Chris, it's an important point, which is any state can simply say that they want an exemption and they get it under the regulations, so those eight states can simply ask for the exemption, and then they're not to do anything until 2014. The second thing that I think that is, that needs to be noted here is that the real timetable here is that the real ID card won't be necessary to 2014. Not 2008, not 2009, not even 2013. The first time it'll be required is 2014, and that's more than ample time for the Congress and the next president or presidents to undo this mistake. Next question, operator.
Our next question comes from Ryan Stengel from Wired.
So your guys' take is that putting the deadline of May 2008 in the first page of the regulations is just a big bluff, even though, because then if you go to what actually turns out to be the last page of the regulations, that's where the extension says you can get one until 2010. You don't see a showdown happening between the states and DHS?
No, I don't think there's going to be a showdown. Among other things, I don't think they're prepared to put the airports in Seattle and Atlanta and other airports around the country into complete chaos, which would happen if they took the position that only those states that had said that they will, comply with Real ID can comply. I mean, that's what the consequence is going to be: worse chaos at the airports than we have now. I don't believe that's going to happen, and I don't think that if you press Secretary Chertoff, that he will say that he's prepared to put America's air travelers into a chaotic situation.
Then what's the point of the May? Is the May 2008 deadline just to look tough? Is that the?
This is all about the illusion of security. It's all about looking tough. The really important dates here are the dates at which the Real ID first will be come into play, and those dates are not till 2014 and the very last days of 2017. This is all kicking the can down the road to the next administration or administrations. That's probably basic politics, but it's a darn shame.
Ryan, this is Tim. I have to add, I feel a bit of sympathy for the Department of Homeland Security. They were given an act which is almost impossible to implement, and they produce regs that show that they can't implement it. And essentially what they've done, as Barry has suggested, is just push this off as far as possible while giving lip service to the regulatory requirement that they were under to produce regulations in a time within the original statute's requirement. We have a question in the room, I believe.
Yep. DHS.
You just identify yourself.
And we'll repeat the question for those on the phone.
Yep.
David Martin, Associated Press Television.
Yep.
DHS has said basically what you guys are promoting is keeping a less secure, easier to forge identification. How do you guys respond to that?
That's complete nonsense.
Barry, why don't we repeat the question?
Oh, I'm sorry. The question was DHS has said that what we're promoting is a less secure, easier to forge driver's license. The answer is that it's complete nonsense. No one here, the ACLU, was opposed to having a more secure driver's license system. I was on a federal panel that was negotiating a more secure license system that was repealed by Real ID, and we were making headway, and it would exist already if we'd been allowed to continue. And the ACLU and the state police chief of Alabama would have been in agreement about that. The um, The problem is that they're setting up a system in which only, you know, law-abiding Americans are going to have a problem getting a real ID. The terrorists will not. Identity thieves will not. They, you know, we believe they know that, and this is a smokescreen.
I think we just would add that if you go to any neighborhood in a big city in America, you can buy high-quality, forged or counterfeited documents almost within a couple of hours. And nothing that happened today will change any of that. All that we are doing is perhaps driving up the street price for a fake ID. We aren't eliminating, the DHS is not eliminating the fact that there will be forged or easily counterfeitable IDs that are available in ubiquitous numbers. What they have done, and what the Secretary has failed to address, although he did speak to it a bit this morning, is that we are essentially creating a system which we are, as a public, supposed to believe is more secure. And what that means is that anybody who has a document which is a forged real ID, or someone who is able to obtain somebody else's information and produce a real ID card under somebody else's information, will have tremendous access to move throughout our society without any imposition or burden, because they'll have this ID that is supposed to be a more secure ID card. So we actually think that the Real ID Act makes us less secure, not more secure.
But let me just play this out for one more second, which is that in some respects, Real ID is identity thieves' dream, by which I mean this. We know that there is rampant fraud in the issuance of driver's licenses, and that's primarily insider fraud. And that the identity thieves are still going to be able to get the real ID card, but it's now a real ID card which is much, much more valuable, because what it is a driver's license in the name of the victim, has the victim's name on it, the person who's had their identity stolen, but it has the thieves' biometric on it. It has the fingerprint or whatever eventually is going to be in here of the thief. And that is a nightmare from which you are never going to be able to extricate yourself. When your thief is running around with an ID and your name, but it's got his or her biometric on it, you're never going to be able to undo that. It's going to be much, much worse than the current situation, and it's going to make those forged identification cards much more valuable. Basic economics tells us that something's that valuable in the marketplace, it's going to be available.
Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Brendan McKenna from the Dallas Morning News.
Information is DHS proposing to put on these Real ID compliant licenses that would be of value to organizations that might want to sell them?
Well, really, it's not the information that's on the card. It's the fact that the card will be demanded by retailers in the future at the same point at which you offer a credit or a debit card. So you will get an instant electronic transaction record that has not only all of the credit card information and the actual details of the purchase, including things which some of us might find embarrassing, the type of reading material that we're purchasing, the magazines that we're reading, perhaps what kind of contraception we're buying, or what types of medicines we're getting from our pharmacy. And that information will be then married up at the counter when we make our purchase with a scan of our license, with all of our address information, anything else that they can read from the machine-readable zone. And when you have that information instantly aggregated, it becomes a commodity in and of itself, that, as Barry said, the marketplace will dictate. We will have people who will take that information, really perfect consumer information, detailing it, you know, really with great detail how much we're spending and when and where, that will then be resold to people who want to sell us other goods and services, or to agencies of the federal government who want to track how much we're spending and where.
Can I add to that? The other thing is that what will be incredibly valuable to an identity thief is what is in the database itself, such as the scanned copy of your birth certificate, which has very useful information on it, like your mother's maiden name and obviously your Social Security number. All this information will be in the database, and it'll be very useful for things like credit card fraud.
Next question, operator.
Our next question comes from Matt Wald from the New York Times.
Thank you, gentlemen. Could you please lay out the top two or three reasons that this can't be implemented? You've said it's expensive, but and you said it's not a good idea, but what makes it impractical?
Let me take a crack at that and let my colleagues then add on. First of all, there is still a huge problem, Matt, with the availability of the so-called breeder documents. Those are the documents that you have to present in order to get a real ID card. Things like birth certificates. I mean, there are two problems. One is that they either simply are not available for many Americans. Think of all those residents of New Orleans, for example, or the documents don't match up. We know that from the state of Alabama, where they try to jump the gun, and they look at the breeder documents and look at the documents that they had on record in their motor vehicle department, and they sent out notices to 60,000 elderly Alabamians saying, you have to come in a DMV because our records don't match up. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is the amount of time that it's now going to take to issue a driver's license. It is, you know, most of the DMVs across the country have over the last decade or so become much more consumer friendly, and they're much more efficient at what they do. This is going to drag them down to the point where those lines that people complain about now at the DMV are going to be around the block, and you're going to have to go back four or five times if you can get a license at all. Thirdly, it's going to drive the cost up to hundreds of dollars to issue one of these driver's licenses. Somebody's going to have to pay it. All those problems are going to cause and have caused the states to balk. Put aside all the privacy issues, make this statute essentially impossible to implement, and DHS hasn't improved any of those issues.
And Matt, this is Tim. I'd like to add at least two more reasons that the Real ID Act, the regulations that were produced today, cannot be implemented. And that's when you get into the regs. Most of the major identification or breeder document verification systems, which will be required from the state's DMVs to actually verify the documents that they are demanding according to the Real ID Act. Those electronic systems have not been built, they're not ready, and they won't be ready for years. So when you get into the regs, you will find page after page they're talking about this identification verification system that has not been built, and another one that hasn't been built, and another one that hasn't been built. We all know that building enormous software systems is very complicated. It takes years. And then when we're talking about hooking up literally thousands of DMVs around the country to such a system, we're talking about years and years and years of delay if those software systems can ever be built. More importantly, it's very difficult to get one national system for each of these verification systems that can be interactive or interoperable with all the 56 jurisdictions that are already issuing licenses and all their disparate computer systems. It's very difficult from a technological point of view to get one system to talk to another, especially when we're talking about systems that have been in place in some cases for decades. So we're talking about an enormous computer headache that has not been resolved and DHS hasn't taken significant steps towards addressing.
So I'm sorry, the breeder document we're talking about here in most cases being a birth certificate, because a passport, for example, can be verified very quickly.
Right, but we're also talking about a Social Security card.
But that's in force already, isn't it, in most states?
One of the things that DHS did today was to punt on a number of these tough issues, including exactly which breeder documents they're in the end going to require. But the one that is crystal clear that you're going to have to present is a birth certificate, assuming you were born in the United States. That's not, you know, as I'm sure you know, that's not as simple as it sounds. In fact, there is no good way to handle that problem, and it's the first thing that the states are going to have begun to encounter as they try to comply with Real ID as they anticipated it, and would also comply. But remember, though, what DHS did today. they essentially said, well, these are going to be the requirements, but we're not actually going to require them in 2014. And all you're going to have to do before then is say that you'll comply with the law.
Right.
There's one other system as well. The statute requires your actual street address be verified as well. There's no system in this country that actually has every American street address, nor is there any kind of document that you can point to that's actually an accepted way to verify someone's street address. And the regulations acknowledge this by just simply ignoring the verification requirements for street addresses. They just ignore the statutory requirement.
Thank you.
Next question, operator.
We have no more questions at this time. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the number 1 now.
I guess we'll take that resounding silence.
Well, hello.
Okay, our first question comes from Alex Newsbaum. One moment, please.
Okay, and where's, I'm sorry, who's
hello?
That from?
Yes. Hi, yeah, Alex Newsbaum with the Bergen Record in New Jersey. On the DHS's website and their FAQ page on these regs, one of the things it says is that contrary to some complaints, these regs do not establish a national database of information and that they don't require states to collect and store information any differently than they do today or they don't give the federal government any more access to that information. I'm just wondering if you guys can comment on that, whether or not you think that's an accurate portrayal.
Now, it is an accurate portrayal, and the reason is because this entire set of regulations has the air of unreality about it. If you get into the regs, it is clear the DHS, despite 2.5 years of looking at the statute, has not even decided the basic architecture for how states can share information. And what we're really talking about is a failure by DHS to decide even the basic questions about how the act is to be implemented. So when you get past the rhetoric, you get past the spin, you find the DHS literally threw their hands up in the air. They say that they might use something called AmbaNet, that they might use a system based on the commercial driver's licensing information system, but they're going to leave it up to the states to decide amongst themselves at some point how the information will be shared. And what that is clear to us is a signal that they just have no idea what they're going to do.
To make this clear, what Tim's point is that...
Can you identify who's talking, by the way?
Sure. This is Chris Calabrese from the ACLU. To make clear what Tim is saying, the statute requires information sharing. It requires all states to share all their driver's license information with each other. Now, whether or not you're making new information accessible or not, that's obviously a substantial amount of new information that's at least available to a new group of people. It's just that DHS can't figure out how to do it, so they've ignored it in the regulations. But the statute requires it.
Let me, if I can, and then we'll see if there are additional questions. Let me make a sort of overarching point here, which is this is being posited by Secretary Chertoff and others somehow as a contest between privacy and security, something we have to balance. Well, the fact is that there has been no demonstration of any security benefit from Real ID. If anything, the weaknesses, including the potential to much worsen the identity theft issue, are such that our security may be lessened rather than enhanced, which means that we don't even have to get to the balance between privacy and security when there is no security. And if we've done something that may seem a little counterintuitive to you, which is to talk about the practical problems and the security issues and we're the ACLU, it's because we think that there has been this false tension that has been created here, and that it's incumbent on the proponents of Real ID to demonstrate that, in fact, they can make this work and that it will have some real security benefit. They can demonstrate that. We're happy then to debate privacy versus security, but they haven't been able to demonstrate that. Any additional questions, operator?
Sure. We do have a question from Chris Strong from Congress Daily.
Hi. Two questions. One is, are you guys saying that there is not going to be a national database of information of personally identifiable information. And the other question is, Chertoff talked about the idea of the DMVs taking photos of people and then sharing those photos. If somebody goes into one DMV and you know uses fraudulent information and then tries to go to another DMV, the DMVs will have to share the photographs of that person. Does that create some concerns about the DMVs becoming kind of an extension of the Homeland Security Department?
Well, let me answer the second question first. Absolutely, that is the goal of Real ID, is turn the DMVs into part of the Homeland Security apparatus, which is not their mission. It's not what they're trained for. It's not what they ought to be doing. But that's what they would be forced to do, and that's why you're hearing from a lot of people in the motor vehicle licensing community their objections to this, which is they don't think they're police officers, and they certainly don't think that they're intelligence officers, and they don't want that role. I don't know if you want to take down the first question.
I think, Chris, you were asking about whether there was indeed a national database that's being created.
Yes.
What we have said from the beginning is that Real ID, if you read the statute as it is written, contemplates the creation of a national ID card system, a system of interoperable federal, state, and local interacting databases that are gathering information from individuals when they go to their DMV, and they are being forced to share all of that information, really robust information, with the other states. What we are seeing today is that DHS has literally failed to resolve the central question of how the architecture for that computer system will be built. So it's not that there won't be a national ID system put in place. It's not that there won't be one uniform database set up. It's that they haven't even wrestled with the tough questions about what it should look like, what protection should be built into it, how we can prevent it from being the worst kind of national ID system. And that's our objection at this point. We've always objected to the fact that Real ID, if it's ever implemented as written, will lead to a national ID system where everybody's information will be available to virtually all federal, state, and local government employees as of right whenever they're doing their jobs.
Yeah, if I just add quickly that, you know, I think the question is how will this national database or sharing information work? And the answer is that, you know, that we at the ACLU don't know, but what is really quite remarkable and, in a sense, scandalous is that DHS, after 3.5 years, doesn't know either, and that they completely punted on that issue. And that tells you a lot about how unworkable this whole system is and why Congress has to go back and revisit it. And I'll just add one other note here, which is, you know, one of the issues that has been raised, which is a legitimate issue, is that in many states they have a problem that people come, that essentially they forum shop, right? I mean, they have their license suspended in Florida, so they go to New York or vice versa, and they try to get a license. And the states wanted some simple way to be able to query one another to determine if an individual already had a license in those states. You can do that, and you can do that fairly simply in ways that don't threaten privacy or security. But by prolonging this debate and by failing to answer the question about how that information will be shared, we are no further along in solving the problem. But that problem could have been solved 5 years ago if we had simply taken the discrete issue and allowed the states to simply query each other, do you have a license for Barry Steinhardt, certain birthday, and they come back and they say yes or no, and if they say yes, then you have an exchange of information. But, you know, unfortunately, that's a real problem, but they haven't solved it. Next question.
Next, we have Donna Howell from Investor Business Daily.
Hi there. I had a clarification question about this machine-readable suction in terms of what you've seen in terms of any kind of limits on what may be in there and what outside entities like retailers might have access to.
There have been absolutely no limitations placed on when the information that can go into the machine-readable zone or on how third parties, whether they be government, other government agencies, or private retailers what they can do with the information obtained in the, encoded on the machine-readable zone. More importantly, if you read the regs, you'll find out that none of the information is actually going to be encrypted. So that means that it will be really easy to skim that information if you're a third-party company. There won't even be an encrypted barrier preventing easy skimming of that information.
Indeed. Well, what is actually supposed to go into the machine-readable section? I mean, are there mandates for what has to be there?
Well, essentially, it's everything that's in the on the face of the license itself. But you know, that's one of the issues where I think it's fair to say that DHS punted again. They didn't completely answer that question.
This is Chris Calabrese from the ACLU. I want to clarify something Tim said. There's no federal limitations on how this information can be used. There are a few states that have said that you cannot scan the back of the information on a driver's license and use it for retail purposes. But that and it's a handful of states, but that's the only protection. There's no federal protection.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the answer to your question overall is that it's an unresolved issue.
Okay. Thanks.
Any additional questions, operator?
Yes, we have Greg Piper from Washington Internet Daily. Go ahead, Greg.
Yes. Regarding the skimming of this data, would this even be a function where DHS would have the authority to restrict this, or would it be up to an agency like the Federal Trade Commission, which may be able to set up under legislation tasking them with creating rules for I guess, non-governmental use of this machine-readable zone?
One of our big complaints, this is Tim Sparapani again, one of our big complaints has been that DHS was well aware of the problems with the way the Real ID Act was written already by May 11th of 2005, and yet they failed to go back to Congress and ask for additional authority or clarification of the act or repeal and modification of certain portions they knew was going to be a problem. That they knew were going to be a problem. So what they could have done is gone to Congress in the last 2 years and said, we know it's going to be a problem, that we can anticipate people will want to steal the information as a homeland security measure off the back of the license. They want to skim it, copy it, and then create forged licenses from that information. So I think that they had the authority under the homeland security rationale to ask for restrictions on the use of these licenses, and yet they failed to do so. It's really a regulatory failure by the Department of Homeland Security.
There's an irony here, which is that DHS apparently thinks that it has complete authority to ignore the statute when it wants to. So, for example, these provisions that states do not have to issue these licenses to being in until 2014. I defy you to find anything in the statute to suggest that that's permissible. But on the other hand, when they encounter real sort of privacy and security issues, they simply say, oh, we can't do that. We're hamstrung by the statute. Well, you can't have it both ways here. If you don't think the statute is adequate and you don't have authority, then go back and tell the Congress that. If you think you have this kind of plenary power to ignore the statute, then do it for good as well as for mischief. Next question, Upper.
We have a question from Peter Brown from Scientific American Magazine. Go ahead, Peter.
Hello. Does the statute offer any other rationale besides security for Real ID? Is there any other that is being claimed here for promoting?
This is Barry Steinhardt. I'll let others add in as well, but you know, there's a funny irony here, which is the statute, the purpose of the statute was crystal clear when it was passed. It was to combat terrorism. And we heard a lot about terrorists who had driver's licenses. DHS has essentially backed away from that, completely now. You barely heard Secretary Chertoff utter the word terrorism today. And that's no longer the rationale that they proposed. They've now come up with a couple of new rationales. The principal one is fighting identity theft. We think the result is going to be actually absolutely the opposite of that. But that's an interesting point, though, which is this was supposed to fight terrorism. Now they're not only backing off of it, but they're saying that you don't actually have to have one of these things until 2014, and that's only half of America. The other half doesn't have to have it until 2018. If this was such an urgent anti-terrorism measure, why is it that we can wait that long?
Well, I wonder if Congress offers for example, any aid and comfort to those who would like a medical ID card or a genetic ID card, or linking any of this information to such databases? I mean, is there anything in the Act that could be construed as a license to for some other agency to do that?
I'm not sure if I'm answering your question completely, but I will say this. We believe that this Real ID card will be the basis for the national ID card system. And if you listen to Secretary Chertoff very carefully, they are not restricting other federal agencies, other state agencies, and other private actors from demanding the Real ID card for all sorts of other additional uses. They are fully contemplating that this thing will be the keystone upon which an entire house of national ID requirements are built. So therefore, when Congress passes a future act requiring a Real ID to, say, vote or get public housing assistance or get a federal loan, to get a student loan, DHS is not going to complain about that. They're not going to say no, and they're not going to prevent it. And that means that, you know, if a certain hospital association or an insurance company wants to begin to demand a Real ID be linked to, you know, a person's medical history or to their insurance history, DHS is not going to prevent that from happening.
And by not protecting the information that's on the machine-readable zone in any way, but making it possible to harvest all that information, they facilitate the collect, not only the collection of that information, but its use for other purposes. And so that the end result has got to be, if this is ever built, and many of us do not believe it can be built, it will be built, but if it were to be built, that it would become the foundation for other forms of not only data collection, but data matching. Any other questions, Amber?
Yes, we do have another question from Brendan McKenna with the Dallas Morning News. Go ahead, Brendan.
Hi. Secretary Chertoff talked about a series of steps that the states would have to go through. He didn't provide much in the way of specifics, but he talked about there being a series of things that they would have to do to prove that they're sort of on board and moving forward. Does that call into question your suggestion that this is a bluff and kicking it down the road?
No, actually, they don't have to prove that they're on board. They just have to certify the most.
I'm sorry, who is that?
I'm sorry?
Which one are you?
No, I'm sorry, it's Barry Steinhardt. I apologize. No, they do not have to certify that they're on board, and they certainly don't have to prove that they're on board. All the states need to do, and most they need to do at this point, is to ask for an extension of time to comply. The fact is that states are not going to be required to do anything of any practical consequence until 2014.
Let me clarify that, if I may. This is Chris Calabrese, because the statute's the regulations are actually very clear on this. Anybody can request an extension until the end of 2009. If I mean any state without any other declaration, simply I request an extension. So now you're to the end of 2009. After that, to get a further extension, a state must certify that it's materially compliant with Real ID, which in fact doesn't mean that you're actually compliant. What it means is that you're doing a series of steps that DHS has required in its material compliance checklist at the end of the regulations. Well, almost all of those steps are basic things that states do now, like, have a secure license and have a security plan. So essentially, you can, and then from that point on, once you're materially compliant, your license is good till 2014. So essentially, there's really very low bars that anyone would have to go to in order to kick this way down the road.
Yeah, and it's just to underscore one point that I think this is important. Remember these important dates here. The first date in which you have to do anything, and it's minimal, of substance is 2009. That is an important date to remember because it kicks into the next administration. And as I said at the outset of this, a lot of this is kick the can down the road, kick it down to the next president. And that's effectively what they've done. There's no real burden at all. It's fairly minimal on the states until 2009, and then when it becomes some other president's problem.
And Barry, this is Tim Sparapani. If I could add a political point on that, at least three of the top four presidential contenders right now have urged for the repeal or reworking of the Real ID Act. So we have Senator Obama, Senator Clinton, and Governor Huckabee, all opposing Real ID. We have, in fact, a whole series of the other presidential candidates who have taken strong stances against Real ID. So we can expect that the next president, whoever he or she may be, is likely to not want to even take the steps that DHS outlined today. And that's why the postponement of Real ID's real requirements, whatever they might be, to at least 2009 means that DHS is just trying to run down the clock and say that they have checked the box and gotten the Real ID regs moving, when in fact they've done nothing but avoid having to wrestle with the real questions posed by the act itself.
Okay, thank you.
Next question, please.
There are no more questions.
Okay. Well, thank you all. Let me just point out that if you have additional questions, we'll be happy to take them, and you can call our press line, which is 202-675-2312. Again, it's Barry Steinhardt speaking, but let me repeat that number. The ACLU press line here in Washington is 202-675-2312, or you can go to www.aclu.org and access it that way as well. So if you do have questions, I'd urge you to make a call to that number.
And finally, one other piece of information. Much of the ACLU's position on Real ID can be found on our other website, which is Real Nightmare. That's one word, .org, realnightmare.org, where you can see the state opposition to Real ID, which continues to grow with every passing day.
Yeah,
thank you, everyone.
Yeah, and actually, let me just put that, sorry, one final point of information, which is we had two documents that were available here that we're also circulating out there. One is the statement that we issued earlier today by Barry Steinhardt, by myself and Tim Sparapani. The other is a fact sheet on the final Real ID regulations. So those will be circulated to many of you on this call by email. They're also available at the ACLU site and at realnightmare.org. Thank you.